Hey, y'all. Welcome. This is Winning at Life Radio, live financial news talk. I know I'm getting requests for that research I'm doing on inflation, and we're working on it. It's coming. I just want to make sure we do good for you. So we're getting a lot of requests on that as well. 504-260-0995. We're over on Facebook Live. I just shared it to my personal page over at Gregory Ricks, the Winning at Life Facebook page. You can pick it up as well and watch the show. The Winning at Life app is a great download for you that you can text, email, call the show. It'll connect you with the Winning at Life Nation. You can get the Monday newsletter that goes out, link to the Q&A, the Wednesday Q&A as well, and more on our podcast that goes by topic. 504-260-0995. Hey, James, how's it going today?
Fantastic. Want to remind the guy listening that the webinar series continues tomorrow, the latest episode in the webinar series from Gregory Ricks and Associates, Gregory's Day Job. This is the No Compromise webinar. So there's one right after lunchtime tomorrow. There's another one Thursday after you get home from work at 6 p.m., but ends conveniently before the show starts. I like how you plan that one out. And then there's another one that was added for Saturday. This is going to be Saturday in the middle of the day. So find whatever time works for you. Put in your email address and learn a little bit more about how to save money on taxes, and more so save money on taxes in retirement.
If you're going to have to pay taxes in the future, then that webinar is for you. You know, if you're working with somebody and they're not asking for a copy of your 1040 and then saying, look, we want to do analysis, we want to provide you with a report, we are looking for opportunities to save you some money and create some efficiency, you need to listen to this webinar.
Super easy to sign up. Go to GregoryRicks.com. At the bottom of every page, a little blue banner pops up. And we can't really make it much easier than that. So go check it out, GregoryRicks.com.
Go to GregoryRicks.com/too much, and let's see about starting a conversation. And that's right, when people are coming in for a meeting, a first meeting, or coming in for a review, or, hey, I need to talk, or we do a follow-up call, you know what we're asking for? Copy of the 1040 to run an analysis. It's that, we think it's that important to get done. It is a big deal. So once again, order that download over at GregoryRicks.com/too much and then call the office and set up a 15-minute call.
Donald on the North Shore, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Donald?
Hey, so me and my wife are considering buying a second home in Orlando, Florida area. It's a seller's market right now. Houses are on the market for usually less than 10 days. But what I'm hearing y'all say is that there might be a bubble that's going to pop. If those foreclosures come through, how would that affect the housing market? Should we wait and get a better price, or is the market going to go up even more then?
Oh, you know, that's tough to predict the extent of the problem. And here's one thing that this... And let's take to the other side. If we go back to 08, which it was housing that was at the root of the Great Recession, what if they put a pause on foreclosures for a year and a half? And you know what that would give a lot of them time for? To work it out. And that's what you have to think on the other side. And it's there's going to be some that, you know... We've had callers call into the show and talk to us about this, where they just got into a house deal, and next thing you know, they lost their job. It's ended, or their business had to close the doors because of COVID. They're not going to have the cash flow. So we know there's problem deals, but that's part of how the system works anyhow. There's always foreclosures going on. Could there be more of a pent up because of the delay? Yes, but it may not be as big as you think because of the time to work it out. And getting a year could make a difference. Go ahead, Donald.
So let me ask you this then. Y'all gave out some numbers about how much people were, how many people were, how much money was behind on their mortgages. Is there any way that I can find that information out for a specific market, such as Orlando or Jacksonville or New Orleans or different like that, to see what their numbers are?
Without it getting submitted, you know, that would be the banks maybe given some percentages of problem areas, because this is something that they look at, that they've got to carry on the books. And that data is being collected. FHA, you know, HUD is probably going to release some of that right there. Actually, James is looking into it there. And Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo, he's kind of good with those numbers too as well. But for actual foreclosures, that means the government's allowing those to be put to the court so that those properties can be taken back and money, or property sold, money collected, and so forth. But that is what's being a pause. So there's nobody getting an eviction notice at this time. So what we could see is this real estate continue to heat up. And I was listening to the Florida's governor this morning.
DeSantis
this morning. And it was really a good piece, kind of two parts. They were kind of talking about business and the housing market and some of what New York and some of them are doing. It's just sending more people down his way. And it's businesses too, not just people changing residences. Businesses are moving down there. And then he also commented on what's going on in Georgia and businesses kind of sticking their nose into government and politics, trying to influence. And he made comments about, you know, they better not be bringing that down to Florida, because we're not going to look on that too well. You know, he's like, we don't need businesses need to worry about business. We'll take care of running the government there. You know, so it was an interesting take. And I really liked DeSantis there, his take on things and his matter of fact view. But he's got it going on in Florida.
Yeah, we're interested in Florida. We're interested in Florida because I can control how much property tax I pay by the amount of property, by the value of my property. But the only way to control your income tax is to reduce your income, and that's not acceptable. So
right,
that's what we're looking for.
You're right. That's the thing we keep talking about here. It's the theme this year, because if taxes go up, your margin, your profit has shrunk, your net has shrunk. And if we can control taxes, we control profits.
Right.
All right, so you know,
and that's why we're looking at Florida.
All right, so while y'all were chatting, I was clicking around listening to Gregory, and I don't know if he's done this before, but Gregory's absolutely right. HUD, if you go to the HUD website, HUD.gov, yeah, they have a database of foreclosures. But what you really want to do is, when you do a Google search for foreclosure homes for sale in my area, there are a lot of private sector businesses who have done a much better job of taking that information and making it presentable to the general public. But when we talk about real estate, we've talked about that a lot over this the course of this show, is it's real estate's all local. So while there could be a rash of foreclosures and new houses flooding on the market, you're dealing with Florida, where people are wanting to move by the tens of thousands every month. And so it doesn't matter if everywhere else has a big rash of foreclosures in the area. If the place there, you
here's
want to
another
move,
reason they may be less, because people have time to work this out. And part of working out is like, heck, I can't make my payments, but I can sell my house for a 20% profit right now.
Yes.
So instead of getting beat down, beat behind, have a foreclosure against them, they could sell their house with the way the market's going and walk away with cash.
It might work out, though, if you wait, and at the end, December 31st, 2021, and they actually don't let foreclosures be put off anymore, and there is a rash. I mean, I can see how that would work out, but it feels a little dice rolly, doesn't it?
If you find something you like and you feel good about it and you have a long enough view on keeping it, you know, where you might feel you're overpaying now. I did a number of years back a deal where I probably paid a $40,000-$50,000 premium on a piece of land, and 24 months later, I was above that. I was good, because I also said, well, I'm buying it because I want to keep it for 30 years. I'm not positioning myself for a flip in a few years. I want it for the long term. So it depends on how you view what you're trying to buy.
Good luck, Donald. I want good things to happen for you and your little experiment here, and then I want you to call us back and tell you how awesome you did on it, okay?
Outstanding. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
Stick with the phones, Gregory?
Yeah.
Okay. Peter in New Orleans, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Peter?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Now, thank you for taking my call. A question regarding my 401 that I have. In February of this year, the market was 31,613 on that date, and the value of my 401 was 184,366. As of on 3/26, it was 33,072, and it dropped 183 to 661. Now, yesterday when the market was high at 33,157, it was 184,63. Now, what I'm saying is that how can with the market going up almost 2,000 points, can my value of my 401 still be $3 less than what it was in February? And I'm using the same program. It's on a Vanguard program. And I'm just curious, how does that occur?
I would probably suggest, just quick thinking here, is that is probably the bond portion of your portfolio affecting it. But when we talk about the market, we're talking about the S&P 500, the Dow mostly there.
I was talking about the Dow Jones Industrial is what I was quoting.
Right. I understand that. And you could also have the NASDAQ, which some of this run up, the NASDAQ was heading the other way for a period of time. We were setting records with S&P 500, and yet we had several days in a row that the NASDAQ was losing. If you're holding bonds, longer-term bonds, you were taking more of an impact versus shorter-duration bonds if you're holding bonds in a portion of your portfolio. So it's counterbalancing those gains. So sometimes that happens. But ultimately,
you
that
think
comes,
I should put in a more aggressive form then temporarily?
What is your age, Peter?
A little bit longer. Well, I'm in my 70s.
Okay. I don't know if you should go more aggressive than that. I think what you show is you probably have some balance, but it depends on what you're trying to get to, what income you're taking. You know, I believe you need to have some equities in there, and I'm a fan of bonds, but you might want to look at that mix. Is that longer duration or shorter duration? Because here's the other side of this is, it was a little over a year ago, we had that big 20-30% correction, and we've had a 54% gain out of that. And for most people, they didn't make 54% on all of their money, because you cannot have that type exposure, because we're within probably 8 to 12 months of another correction.
So air quotes, Peter had this money in his 401k, and he was upset that it's not.
And he's 70.
Yeah. Well, that's the part. That's the part that caught your ear on the break. He's 70. Now, why is that odd for someone in their 70s to be asking about the investments in their 401k?
Yeah. So one of two things. He's still working at 70, which is awesome to be able to do that and enjoy it and be healthy about it. Then the other part is to be cognizant of what's going on. Is like kind of, all these records and my money's not going up. Well, it's going to go about the blend of his portfolio in that case. If he's not still working, then that means the money's at the old job, which might be kind of part of the problem there. If you are still working, I'll just throw out there a little towards my daytime job of CEO of Gregory Ricks and Associates, the Total Wealth Authority. We have a 401k maximizer subject to risk to help with blending and keep proper allocations there as well to give help on that to a person's situation. If it's at the old job, then you've got to think of, do I leave it there? Do I roll it over? Do I to an IRA? Do I get some help with that? And you probably get better choices for asset allocation and blending within those allocations to maximize that. But at the core, without knowing how much money he has, when's he retiring, how much income he's going to need, how much is in that 401k compared to overall assets, and then I don't actually know his allocations. Because you could be having some large, small, mid-cap type funds in there. You could have some active managed funds. Or you could well be using some index funds where the money's linked to the is invested in the S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ. But it depends on that mix of funds or ETFs inside that 401k that could be affecting that growth as well. As I spoke about, he probably has some bonds in there and could have some longer duration as well. So the longer, you know, when you got a 30-year bond, interest rates move are going to be larger impacts on that versus, say, a 5-year maturity as well. So that is something to think about as all those blends go. And, you know, once again, now it causes me to shift over to the 50, the
Invest 50-50
blend out there, where I think predominantly most people should have three allocation or asset classes out there. I like some stocks, I like some bonds, and I like some index linked growth. And for most people, that's probably on the Wall Street side, which would be the stock ETFs and the bond ETFs. You're probably talking about 50% of your assets there, and only one half of that 50, which is 25% of overall, linked to stock ETFs. But that index linked is linked to upside of those major indices typically. So that gives you 75% of the upside with only 25% exposure to the downside of stocks. And that's where, you know, it's something, once again, I think you should really take a look at. So it is great opportunity money, but when we know things are going to get tough at some point, and it is, the average correction runs about 1.84 years, something to think about there. Let's talk about Archegos, this hedge fund that made the news a few weeks back, and some news came out today, and I thought this was really interesting. But there's this movie, and I think I actually saw it again a few weeks ago, Margin Call. It's one of these kind of harkens back to the Great Recession, you know, when some of those firms got in trouble early on, and what happened to those portfolios and what they were doing and those mortgage-backed securities that they were selling. And that movie's about a big Wall Street firm, and it kind of starts out that they're cutting back the staff by 25 to 50%. They just felt it's time to dial it back. So it kind of starts about that, and some key people were let go that day. And then as one of the risk analysts gets in the elevator, two of the guys he had hired, they were kind of saying bye to him, and right before the doors close, he hands him has one of the guys a thumb drive, says, "I was working on this, maybe you can take a look at it and finish it up." And as the door closes, he says, "Be careful with this." So the guy goes back to work, does his day, and at the end of the day, he starts working on that model that's in that. And he spends, looks like, a couple hours on it. And the next thing he knows, he goes, "Whoa." And he starts calling his boss and some others. And then that guy comes in and takes a look at it. He calls his boss. And his boss comes in there. And then he calls somebody else. And then that guy calls the CEO. So at about 3 a.m, that guy's helicoptering in. They're having a board meeting, and these people that figured this out are explaining it. And then they brought other risk people in that should have been aware of it to ask them, "Why the heck didn't you see this coming?" And then on the back end of that meeting, he says, what if we sell it all? Because one of the guys said, "Well, what do we do? How about you? Why don't you speak up? Why don't you tell us what we should do?" And he paused and he said, "Well, why don't we sell it all?" Okay, so he looks at his head of trading, and asks, "Can you do it?" And that guy says, "Yeah, but at what cost?" So it doesn't matter the cost. We have to get out. It's over. And that's kind of what the movie was about. I think this happened a couple weeks ago. Previously unreported detail that shows the extraordinary steps some banks took to protect themselves from incurring losses from a client's meltdown. The moves benefited Morgan Stanley, the world's biggest equities trading shop, and its shareholders, while the bank escaped from the episode without material losses. Other firms were less fortunate. Credit Suisse today announced that they took a $4.7 billion hit after unwinding losses from Archegos positions. The firm also cut its dividend and halted share buybacks. They're drained of cash, is what that's telling me. Morgan Stanley had the consent of Archegos, run by Tiger Management analyst Bill Hang, and to shop around its stock late Thursday, these people said. The bank offered the shares at a discount, telling hedge funds that they were a part of a margin call that could prevent a collapse of an unnamed client. But get this, the investment bank had information it didn't share with the stock buyers. The basket of shares it was selling comprised of eight or so names, including Baidu, Tencent Music, was merely the opening salvo of an unprecedented wave of tens of billions of dollars in sales by Morgan Stanley and other investment banks starting the very next day. To me, that sounds like a meeting happened. Some of the clients felt betrayed by Morgan Stanley because they didn't receive the crucial context, according to one of the people familiar with the trades. The hedge funds learned later in press reports that Hang and his prime brokers convened Thursday night in an attempt to orderly unwind of his positions, a difficult task considering the risk that word could get out. And in that movie, that's kind of what they talked about. He said, you know, what can we do? Well, he said, you know, so how would we do it? And he was giving the orders, but he said by 10 o'clock, you know, the word's going to be out. Then it's going to get really difficult. The feds are going to be in trying to stop you, but you just keep selling. And by noon, you're probably done.
Gregory's explaining to me and you what this Archegos deal is about. It's a company that I hadn't heard of until the end of last week. And this is pretty good because I've seen the headlines and I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. But apparently it's just one of these big funds that was trying to sell everything they could before people were catching on that what they were selling wasn't so great. But there was a piece of information left off, and that's what could make it possibly a criminal act. Did I have all that right?
Yeah, I don't know about criminal, but...
it's shady for sure, but criminal's a maybe, huh?
I don't think it's criminal.
To withhold information like that?
It's selling a house and, you know, there was termite damage, but you didn't figure they're going to know. And if they do, there's nothing they can do about it. They're supposed to get an inspector. It had damage and
I hear you.
It did have damage.
Oh, do we have termites? Oh, that's so weird. I don't have any documentation. Yeah,
Morgan Stanley dumped $5 billion in Archegos stocks the night before the massive fire sale hit rivals. Where I left off, some of the clients felt betrayed by Morgan Stanley because they didn't receive crucial context. You know, they said, telling the hedge funds that they were part of a margin call that could prevent the collapse of an unnamed client. Well, they knew who the client was. They didn't want to share that, but they knew they were going to collapse. It was done. This was the getting out ahead of the rest. And that's what Morgan Stanley basically got out without any pain, without material losses. And other firms were less fortunate. So the hedge funds, once again, didn't receive crucial context. According to one of the people familiar with the trades, the hedge funds learned later in press reports that Hang and his prime brokers convened Thursday night. They met Thursday night in attempt an orderly unwind of positions. A pretty big task considering the risk that word would get out. They wanted to get out. Oh, it's getting out the next morning. Can we do some selling tonight? That means at least some of the bankers at Morgan Stanley knew the extent of the selling that was likely and that Hang's firm was unlikely to be saved. There's your context there. And the knowledge helped Morgan Stanley and rival Goldman Sachs, avoid losses because the firms quickly disposed of shares tied to Archegos. Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs declined comment on this Wall Street article here. And Morgan Stanley was the biggest holder of top 10 stocks traded by Archegos at the end of 2020 with about, and this is what's interesting here is these numbers, with about $18 billion in positions overall. According to an analysis of filings by market participants. Credit Suisse was the second most exposed at about $10 billion. And as I mentioned earlier, they took losses of $4.7 billion. They've cut their dividend and halted share buybacks. That means Morgan Stanley could have faced roughly $10 billion in losses had it not acted quickly, because it was the largest holder. And I'm going to keep this clean right here, but one person with knowledge said, I think this was an oh shoot moment where Morgan Stanley was looking at potentially $10 billion in losses on their book alone, and they had to move the risk fast. While Goldman's sell of $10.5 billion of Archaeos-related stock on Friday, March 26, was widely reported after the bank blasted emails to a broad list of clients. Morgan Stanley's move the night before went unreported until now, because the bank dealt with fewer than a half dozen hedge funds, basically keeping the transactions on the down low. After Morgan Stanley and Goldman sold their first blocks of shares with the consent of Archegos. It's okay if y'all start selling. The floodgates opened. The prime brokers, including Morgan Stanley and Credit Suisse, then exercised their rights under default, seizing the firm's collateral and selling off positions on Friday, according to sources. So this was major positioning moves on Friday. Another industry source basically said it was a gigantic cluster of five different banks trying to unwind billions of dollars at the same time and not talking to each other, trading at whatever prices were advantageous to themselves. So it sounds like they were beating each other up, and Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley came out ahead of the fight between the five. Morgan Stanley largely exited Archegos positions by Friday, March 26, with the exception of one holding of 45 million shares of Viacom CBS, which it shopped to clients on Sunday. So even through the weekend, they're still were working to try and to get out of this. The bank's delayed disposal of Viacom shares has sparked questions and speculation that it held on to the stock because it wanted a secondary offering run by Morgan Stanley before the week was closed. Two last comments I think are important here. Despite leaving some of, and this goes to what you were saying, James, despite leaving some of its hedge fund clients feeling less than thrilled, Morgan Stanley isn't likely to lose them over the Archegos episode, the people said. That's because the funds want access to shares of hot initial public offerings that Morgan Stanley, as one of the top bankers in the U.S. tech industry, can hand out.
Okay.
So they're, they roughed up some customers, but they'll be back because the customers can make money in the future.
All right. I think I found one of the charts that kind of puts a little bit of illustration on this. One of the stocks that you had mentioned that was pulling the whole company down was Viacom CBS, and they have fallen, kind of looks like, more about half of their share price from March 22nd. It went from, looks like, right at $100, and it's at $44 a share today.
And the other two were Baidu and Tencent.
Yeah. Those are Chinese companies. So
yeah, they were not.
What
doing
could possibly
well.
Go wrong if you're investing?
Yeah, there billions. Was a lot of Chinese stocks in that portfolio.
Yeah, so Viacom CBS was cut by half. Discovery took some big losses. And they just had their books in the perfectly wrong order to absorb that. So this really is like the movie Margin Call.
Yeah, it just, when I read that like this afternoon, it reminded me of that. Like, this like the movie right here happening over this, started Thursday night and ran through the weekend.
Well, I think one of the good lessons that I like to just put in my little bank of context is whenever people talk about how millionaires and billionaires aren't paying their fair share and it's not fair. And hey, a lot of millionaires and billionaires are created every day. A lot of millionaires and billionaires lose it all every day. And for a lot of the people that get up into that top echelon, there's no guarantee they're going to stay there. There's no guarantee they're going to be there a year from now. And if you think you had a bad week, just think about that. Credit Suisse just lost over $4 billion on this transaction, or this lack of transactions.
Yeah, they have to absorb those losses, and they'll do it and live to trade another day.
You know, some of these huge mistake stories do make me feel better, like the boat that got caught in the Suez Canal. It's like, I made some big mistakes, but none of them can you see from space. Like the Suez Canal boat got stuck. They were showing the Google Maps, whatever picture of it. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that was an expensive event as well.
Well, is there a spot for hedge funds like Archegos and the Invest 50-50 strategy?
No.
Yeah, right? No, how did that not make the cut?
Great. I was just like, I was trying to find the catch in the question. There is none.
Like, why would you even say that, Parker?
No.
All right, tell them about your day job and how you don't mess with these crazy hedge funds.
We put the client's best interest first, no matter what. I think if you do that, that takes care of everything else. We use a lot of research and a lot of history to make good decisions going forward. And the core of that is finding balance. And once again, what's best for the client, no matter what's best for the client. If you want to know more about the Invest 50-50 philosophy, you want to know more about saving some taxes, how about the guided planning system? Go to gregoryricks.com and then call the office at 504-832-9200.
I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is an independent financial services firm that utilizes a variety of investment and insurance products. Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.